Theodore Parker was a radical Unitarian minister in the 1800s and the 19th century in Boston. He was the man who first wrote a government for the people, by the people, and of the people. Lincoln's speechwriter kind of liked him. He was also the person that first wrote, "The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice." He was a radical preacher. The stories tell that he preached his sermons with a Bible in one hand and a gun in the other. The gun being there to protect the freed slaves who were members of his congregation in Boston as he resisted the Fugitive Slave Act that would have them forcibly removed back to the South. He was a radical in all he thought and he did, so radical that he was part of the Secret Six who funded John Brown's raid on Harper's Ferry, an attack on the U.S. government in hopes of freeing the slaves. Reverend Aaron White, who serves our congregation in Dallas, says that even though all of these things were true, even though he was a radical, a rabble-rouser, a deep, passionate advocate for justice, all of these things were true, but they were not what got him in trouble with the Unitarians, his kindred. What got him in trouble with his fellow Unitarian ministers was his theology, his beliefs about the world. Because in 1841, he preached this sermon entitled "The Transient and the Permanent in Christianity." And essentially what he said in this sermon was that there is something fleeting and something permanent at the heart of the Christian faith. Back then, Unitarians were solidly in the Christian faith, or at least they thought they were. Other people differed about that. But in this sermon, Parker said that there is something at the heart. The permanent part of the religion that they practice was the love of God and the love of their neighbor. And that everything else, the way the religion was practiced, how you gathered on Sundays, how you experienced the Bible, what types of prayers you did you fast, did you have holy days, all of this was transitory. He said in this sermon, it was like an angel that would take on a robe in one century and in the next cast it away. For as Parker looked at the history of Christianity, he realized that the things that were important to the Christian church 100 years ago were no longer important to them now. And he surmised that the pattern didn't stop here, that the 19th century Christians didn't have it all figured out, and that in fact the next generation would come on and that angel, that heart of Christianity, would put on a new robe looking different in a different age, and yet would still have something in its core that would be recognized as deeply true. True across time. True across place. This challenged his Unitarian contemporaries. What Parker was preaching was essentially the core of what we would call religious liberalism. These ironically, Trinitarian or tri-parts that I think define religious liberalism is these three convictions. The first is that we as humans don't know much. The second, that we can know more. And the third, that it might change. That we don't know much, that we can know more, and that it might change. Parker was preaching this not only about the evolving sciences at the time, but also about faith, also about religion. And so the reaction to this sermon was cataclysmic. It was mostly cataclysmic because some of the people who didn't like the Unitarians at the time secretly came to the place he was preaching the sermon and wrote it all down very fast and then published it, saying, see, these Unitarians, they don't actually believe in the Bible, they don't actually believe Jesus, because one of the things that Parker says is that it may be true that the Jesus part of Christianity is temporary as well. It was a little bit heretical at the time. And so the Unitarian ministers gathered. They had seen this bad publicity. They had seen people talking about how they weren't actually Christian because of this sermon. And so for 2 years, they had conversations with each other about what to do with Theodore Parker. The conversations that they had with him in the room. As Aaron White says in his sermon, many times in his journal, Theodore Parker wrote that he left these meetings in tears. All he wanted to do and be was a Unitarian minister. He was trying to preach what was on his heart. And yet, he was challenged, chastised, embarrassed. His sermon hit at the fault line in the soul of many of us. That for in all of us, there is an impulse to conserve. An impulse that honors what has been, what is time-tested, what wants us to allow things to slowly evolve. It hit on the fault line between this impulse to conserve, to have deference towards tradition, what has been handed down to us, and the impulse to progress, to honor the movements of innovation, to trust the direct experience of this moment rather than the past. His sermon preached into the middle of this fault. And it challenged his Unitarian contemporaries. My guess is it challenged them because many of them believed as he believed. But they felt that if they admitted so in public, they would be ridiculed. And so they favored a more slow transition. Instead of jettisoning essentially every part of Christianity all at once, maybe over the centuries we would do it slowly. Maybe you can recognize your own impulse sometimes, both the impulse to get it all done now, change everything, but also the impulse to do it slowly, to sometimes keep the stories that help us come together, even if we know they're not all true. The impulse to conserve, the impulse to progress. Now here's where I make a confession to you all. Which is that secretly, as I think about that fault line, I realize that I'm actually a monarchist. So I grew up in Canada. Canada is not a republic. Canada is a constitutional monarchy, which essentially means that our head of state is the Queen of England, which in the 21st century seems ridiculous. It seems ridiculous that some person's lineage would make them essentially the arbiter of whether or not my country can go to war or not. And yet, when I think about getting rid of the monarchy and getting rid of this tradition, I think about getting rid of the Governor General, who is the Queen's representative in Canada. And when I think about that, I think about getting rid of Michel Jean. Michel Jean was the Governor General when I was growing up. She was a Haitian immigrant refugee that came to Canada. She was a news reporter that spoke about the marginalized. She was elevated to the position of Governor General and used her position to bring the country together to care for those marginalized, to care for children and women. She was the symbol of this multicultural Canada. And so even though I think it's ridiculous that the monarchy exists, when we talk about abolishing it, that impulse to conserve gets activated, because even though I don't think it's true, the illusion of what it can represent means something to me. My head and my heart are disconnected. Maybe there's moments in your life that you feel that disconnect as well, when the story of what it means is different than what you think. So after those 2 years of discussion about these impulses to progress or to conserve, the ministers in Boston came to a decision. What were they going to do with Theodore Parker? Now, the challenge was that there wasn't actually much they could do to him, because it's actually very difficult to kick out a Unitarian from the Unitarian faith. We are not a faith that says that you must believe a certain creed to be a part of us. And so Theodore Parker had not transgressed a creed. We are a covenantal faith. A covenantal faith means that we are bound by our promises to each other. And Theodore Parker had not broken those promises of how he was to be with his fellow Unitarians, so there was not much they could do to justify kicking him out. And so they did what all good people do when they're caught in the corner, is they decided just to be mean to him. They stopped exchanging pulpits. They shunned him. They spread rumors about him. They decided that he wasn't to be a part of them in the heart, even if they couldn't organizationally kick him out. There, at that time, the roots of the division about Theodore Parker were about his theology. But now, as we think about Unitarian Universalism in the 21st century, the divisions that we might have those similar conversations about who we don't kick out, but who we might just be mean to, is not so much about theology, but about politics. For in many Unitarian Universalist churches, we struggle not with theological diversity, but political diversity. Which brings us to the question that we're engaging with in this sermon, which is, can you be a UU and a conservative? And the answer has to be yes. The answer has to be yes, because religious liberalism, those three tenets which say we don't know much, we can know more, and it might change, do not preclude someone from a life journey which brings them to conservative political principles. The free and responsible search for truth and meaning that we endow to each and every person in this faith does not preclude someone from finding a faith rooted in conservative political ideologies. We're done. And there's more to say. There's more to say, because what's more important than whether or not you can be a Unitarian Universalist and a conservative is another question, which is, can you be a Unitarian Universalist and be a fundamentalist? And the answer is no. Any sort of fundamentalism, liberal or conservative, is incompatible with Unitarian Universalism. If you believe the one true Messiah arrived in first century Palestine, and the only correct way to heaven is to worship him, and everyone who doesn't do that is going to hell, that is a fundamentalist belief, and it's incompatible with our shared faith. And if you believe the one true Messiah appears at 9 p.m. Eastern on MSNBC, who speaks only truth, then you are a fundamentalist, and that is incompatible with Unitarian Universalism. As much as I love Rachel Maddow, she does not preach gospel truth in this church. Because no matter our politics, being a follower of liberal religion demands a deep humility to say that what I believe, what you believe, what we think is correct, even if there is a liberal consensus within a group of people, is not inherently the truth. We as Unitarians back in our history were strong proponents of the eugenics movement. We believed that the perfecting of the human race through not allowing certain people to procreate was the way to freedom and a perfection of a society. It was a liberal political and liberal religious belief. We were wrong then. And it is very much the case that liberal beliefs that many of us hold in this church, when we look back at them in 20, 30, 40, 50 years, will also turn out to be wrong. We, as liberal religionists, need a humility to understand that what we believe about the world may not be true. What else is incompatible with Unitarian Universalism is a belief that a certain belief that someone else holds should be a litmus test for whether or not we can be in relationship with them. The idea that if you hold a certain belief, I cannot be in relationship with you. Because the core of a covenantal faith is to make promises to each other, to be with each other through our differences, to reach out a hand to say that our differences might actually provide insights into the world in ways that we could not arrive if we were just around like-minded people. What is needed in our faith community as Unitarian Universalists is a deep humility, is to reach out our hand to those who believe different things, and to together manage the polarity between that conserving impulse that is in all of us and that progressing one. To live in the tension between both, because both provides us a generative place to transform the world. There is one more thing, though, which is that the final challenge for this connection between Unitarian Universalism and the conservative political movement is around the current climate that we find ourselves in. In many ways, the current Republican Party has abandoned key conservative principles in the embrace of nativism and populism, which means for many conservatives, they feel like they do not have a political home. This is unfortunate. It leads us to feel powerless and disconnected from our ability to have political impact. It is also true that in the 1950s and 1960s, as the civil rights movement was moving through this country, Unitarian Universalists decided to align themselves alongside the movement for civil rights and equal treatments for people despite their race. And that moment in this country, Dr. Mark Morrison Reed, a historian of Unitarian Universalism, says that moment in this country was when there was a deep split that happened in our nation. A deep split between liberals and conservatives, because what happened in the civil rights movement was a radical departure from what this country was, a country that was dominated by white people for essentially its entire history. And so the progressive impulse to extend franchise, to create an equality amongst all people, won the day at least partially. And so the reaction on some sides, that conserving impulse, which lives in both liberal and conservative circles, went into reactionary mode. And the difficulty then in these moments is how to bridge that gap between the reaction to the civil rights movement, which we aligned ourselves with because of our principles, and the ways that much of the conservative political establishment is working to erode that movement. So it is a challenge, but it is not insurmountable. And we will not get anywhere if we continue to believe that every conservative has a certain belief, has a certain perspective. We need to reach out that hand in deep humility and wonder what will happen when we connect. There's a story that I think is instructive for us. It's a story about the first Unitarian Society in Chicago in the 1940s. This church was a segregated church, as were most of the churches in this country at this time. In the 1940s, this church was debating whether or not they would desegregate. It was a very contentious conversation. There were lots of different political opinions on different sides. Even those who supported the burgeoning civil rights movement didn't necessarily support integration. They supported a separate but equal vision for racial justice. And so the congregation was caught in a deep but respectful debate. And the story goes that the board meeting that was going to decide whether or not this was going to happen, there was a deep conversation and dialogue that lasted way into the night. There was one member of the church that did not believe that the church should desegregate, that it would make desegregation a belief that everyone would have to describe to. The conversation was respectful, though. And so late into that evening, someone asked this member what the purpose of church was. The man thought about it and responded, "The purpose of church is to get a hold of people like me and change them." This is not to say, though, that the purpose of church is about convincing each other. The purpose of church is about a relationship of transformation, that something more can come from it with humility, respect, and a dialogue. And that is what I hope for our country and our congregation. Amen, and blessed be.